Welcome to Champagne Sunday. I'm Lauren.
Hey, I'm Bonnie.
I'm Beth.
And we're going to talk about life
after divorce.
And living
the best life.
Best life and the life you love.
Yes, living the life you love on that other side.
Cheers. Cheers.
Cheers. Welcome.
Okay, so tonight, ladies, we're asking ourselves, how important is closure?
So like from big relationships, little relationships, anything, like just the whole concept of having closure.
Yeah, and I would say in your romantic relationships or not, even in work relationships or like...
Okay, so I think...
How important is closure?
So I think closure is important for yourself. I don't necessarily think it has to involve all of the people involved.
Yeah, I agree.
In order to have it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to be the...
Go ahead.
Wah, 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 wah. Okay. I think that people like that word. It's like a psychobabble kind of word. It's a popular word, and people have adopted it into their language, but I don't think that is the most important part of your healing process.
Mm-mm.
That would be great in a perfect world if everybody apologized and actually meant it and you felt it. That would be fabulous, and you could move on and everybody would get their little Cinderella ending. But Bonnie and I were talking about this earlier. If you were going to get the Cinderella ending, you probably wouldn't need closure because you would be with the person if they were the type that apologized. And I think we put too much emphasis on the other person apologizing to you and telling you, hey, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings, or I'm sorry I broke up our marriage, I'm sorry I had a girlfriend. But I think we put too much emphasis on that. I don't think you need that necessarily heal. Would it help? Would it be the package with the little beautiful bow wrapped up on it? Yeah, but I don't think you actually need that. I think people have decided you in their brain that has to be one step in your recovery. And I think you can recover just fine and move past that point without it.
I have done a lot of, like, especially since my divorce, or I had a job change a few years ago, too, and I think that's part of what sparked it, is asking myself, do I need that? Like, do I need that from whoever, from employer, ex-husband, friend, when something has, gone awry or just sort of fallen away, like not gone how you thought it would. I will often go, okay, should I reach out or should we talk about this? And then I go, wait. Do I need that? And when my answer is no, then I'm not going to explore that. Because if my answer is no, then the other person needs to do that if their answer is yes. That's how I feel about it.
Okay, well, what is y'all's definition of closure? Like, what is your definition of closure? What is closure to you?
That denouement. It's a resolution.
So it's an ending. Is it an acceptance of an ending?
And sometimes that can be one-sided.
I think it's both.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think people think that you have to have quote-unquote closure, that somebody has to apologize to you, or somebody has to admit wrongdoing, or somebody has to ask for forgiveness, or you can forgive people without them asking for forgiveness, because basically forgiveness is for you. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with them. And I think people think that you have to have, I think they think this is a step you have to have in order to accept what happened or to get over what happened. And I don't think that it is. I think it would be great if it was, but it's not. I mean, if it was accessible to you, if somebody did apologize to you, I think that's great.
So,
but do I think that you have to have it to heal? No.
So, in a story arc, and this is your field of study too, stories. A resolution or a denouement is a new understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And once I'm there, once I've had that, I don't really need anything else is how.
Yeah. And I think for me in my life to have just that acceptance. There's an ending.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I'm headed, and turn and face in the other direction. I don't, if I'm trying to grab on to and get some apologies or, you know, for someone to admit to me that they did me wrong, then I'm not willing to close that door yet.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm needing those apologies, I'm wanting to keep that door open. I'm looking to keep it open. Mm-hmm. So for me to move on is even, I think, healthier for me in my life to not even have what people call a typical closure. My closure is something that I create myself, not dependent on other.
And I think too, sometimes it's not about, especially with friends, and we've hit on this a bit. It's not necessarily about closure, but a new
understanding,
way of working together, a new way of being friends. And sometimes that means deeper, and sometimes that means taking a step back.
You know? Well, and sometimes it means no closure at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have closure, it means an end. And sometimes it's just a whole lot easier to just let things go and dissolve on their own, mm-hmm. and not have any sort of formal out there closure. Just look up a couple of decades later and go, oh, wow, that ended some time ago.
Yeah.
Remember, you know, so I think there's all sorts of different with different relationships. But yeah, I don't think you have to have the other person involved in a closure or an ending.
Your closure's yours.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
and it can't be dependent, because as I tell my daughter and told my students all the time, who can you control? Yourself.
Yeah. And your reaction.
You can't control anyone else. The only person in any situation you can control is you. So your closure is on you. It cannot be dependent on anybody else, or you leave yourself open and in a hurt place. If you're depending on somebody else.
Yeah. I think a lot of people get stuck because they're waiting for the other people to admit wrongdoing or I'll just use my thing, for example. You know, I stayed in my marriage for 10 extra years. We were in counseling the whole time. The whole time, you know what I focused on? Well, not the whole time, but a lot of my, where I got stuck was I wanted him to tell me when the affair started and when it ended. My brain wanted definite, concrete, little, what would you say? Parentheses.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, do you know this birth and the death of this affair? And if he had actually finished, but he would never give me that ever. And it was like that one thing that I was doing all the work on the other side, but that one thing, it was that one thing that I kept circling back to. So, and once I let that go, because I realized it doesn't even matter.
No, but it's part of, because I did the same thing. I went through every detail, every text to make sense of the win of both of the actual affairs that I know about. And I think that part of it is so we can make sense of our lives at that
time. Mm-hmm.
Like, at least for me, I think that was a lot of it. Like,
mine was cataloging. I wanted to see it in black and white.
Yeah.
And I'm very visual about things. I have pictures of ex-boyfriends on my phone that Bonnie gets on to me all the time. But I said, you know,
I do. There's some not letting go there.
Yeah. I don't think it's not letting go. I think what it is I look at it and think, remember, this was not for you.
Yeah.
Don't think about this. This was not for you. This is not an example of what a good, mm-hmm. loving, kind relationship was. Oh, yeah. On to something new. I did not need that. I don't know if it's because I'm Irish or stubborn or just because of my type A personality or because I'm visual. I need that reminder, just like I like to keep.
See, and I am visual, which is why I needed everything gone. I needed no reminder.
In a different way, yeah.
I needed it the opposite way.
Yeah.
But talking about keeping tallies, so as the wife of an alcoholic, I knew where we were in his alcoholism by keeping up with the amount of consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he started hiding how much he was drinking, it was, can I find a bottle? You know, so if I go through all the hiding places, but I felt like if I knew that he wasn't drinking, if the 12 hiding places were empty and things were, you know what I mean? Like I was still trying to tally and keep up with where we were. And it just, and even after we divorced, it was so hard to let go and to have closure because I still felt responsible in some ways for managing his alcoholism, for trying to see if he's sober.
Yeah.
Well, and that's a pattern too.
Yeah, it is. And it was me caring for him, but in ways I finally had to give my care of him back to him.
Yes.
And that was the hardest lesson I had to learn in divorce, mm-hmm. is that I could not keep him from being an alcoholic, and I could not manage his alcoholism, and I couldn't love it out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't matter how many times I went and begged him and had him go back and he convinced him rehab again or this, that, and the other. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, that was a hard thing for me. You can't make somebody love you or want to
behave,
be a beautiful family of four, or behave in a way that was respectful to your wife and children, or behave in a way that, you know, as you would say in the South, that your mama raised you. you can't make anybody do anything they don't want to do.
No.
And, you know, addictive people do their addiction is their number one thing in life. It doesn't matter how beautiful you are, how much money you have, how smart you are, how accomplished you are,
or how much you love them.
No, and your love will never make them give up their addiction. Mm-mm. The only person that can give up an addiction or a girlfriend or a lifestyle or whatever they put in front of them as number one, the only person that can make them do that is themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You can't change anybody. You can't change their mind. You have no control of a situation. And that was the hardest thing for me to realize. There's nothing I can do to save this marriage. There's nothing I can do to have someone love me.
And the funny thing is, like, we all tried for the longest time. And I got to the end of mine and realized I didn't love him enough to keep trying. I didn't love him enough. It wasn't enough.
See, and in my marriage, it got to the end where I didn't even have a chance to feel that because mm-hmm. I felt like I was having to love him enough to save him.
But don't
because
you
it was
feel
an addictive-
like there are some people that you love enough. Yeah. I don't know. You know? No. Okay, but, well, but say, think, say but your think, hot take. Say it.
And that's the wrong mindset, Lauren. The problem is, and what I wanted to ask you when you were saying that, you felt like you didn't love him enough, but I think in the middle of it, you didn't love yourself enough to pick yourself until the end.
And that's the problem is that he didn't love you enough. Yeah. It is hard to love someone who is behaving like they don't love you.
Mm, no, I disagree with that one too. He didn't love himself enough to be the man that he was supposed to be in the marriage.
He
didn't love himself enough to be the man of the house, the husband, the father.
Oh, that's definitely
the whatever. If you don't love yourself enough and have enough respect for yourself in how you're conducting yourself, that's the bottom line. And I feel like I wanted to say that to you. You finally decided to love yourself enough mm-hmm. to get out. I feel like I felt finally said, Beth, you're worth loving. You are enough the way you are. And he is not respecting you. And he is not doing this. And I had a friend, my friend Rebecca, she kept telling me, Beth, this is not right. He does not love you. If he loved you, he would do this. And I kept saying, he doesn't even love himself. He's not proud of himself.
Well, you can't love someone else before you love yourself. You have to love who
you have to love yourself. Because and you have to love for anybody else.
Yeah. I think I finally got to the place where I loved myself enough to get out of the marriage. I stayed in my marriage for a long time because I knew my husband was sick. It was alcoholism. He was having addiction. And I did not feel like it was right to leave him.
Right.
But I did. And I did not end up getting any sort of magical closure from him. I got half-assed apologies that didn't really mean a whole lot, but I didn't really get any closure.
Well, we talked about that too. I felt like I got the enough of an apology that he checked the box.
Yes.
That he did it. Really. But I didn't feel like I would do this.
Yeah.
I didn't feel it that he loved me.
But I
didn't feel that his apology was real. And, you know,
But I do still have closure from that relationship. I had closure before he died from that relationship because I created the closure.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, I knew I had done everything in the world possible to save the marriage. I had done everything in the world to try and save him from alcoholism. Not that I could even do that. I had done everything to love him that I could. And in the end, I could. It wasn't enough for him that it was everything I needed it to be for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I had the closure I needed, but it was closure I created.
I, the things that needed to happen to recover from the cheating originally just didn't happen. And I don't know if it would have made a difference or not, but it just kind of went away. You know, the relationship disintegrated. But then when I decided to finally leave, it was the heart. He made it so hard for me to leave, like every obstacle.
But it's not. But it's not. But he didn't make it hard for you to leave because he was trying to love you.
No.
He made it hard for you.
He made it hard for you to control me and punish me for wanting to leave.
Yeah,
despite the fact that like
it was.
It started with him. So did I get closure from that? No. However, do I have personal closure from that? Yes. Because I knew at the second I decided it was done for me.
Part of my self-closure was coming to the realization that there was nothing I could do. I had felt like I had done everything I could do to save the marriage, but I came to the realization that it takes two people working at the same kind of fever to save something like that. And that during that 10 years, I felt like a huge failure for a very long time. I felt like a failure because I was my own worst enemy. I thought I could fix it. And I felt like a failure because I couldn't fix it. I was spinning my wheels. And then when I finally realized I can't fix this, I can't make someone stay, love me, want to be a parent, want to be a husband. Yeah. I can't do that. And then all of a sudden, it was like I had a weight lifted off my shoulder. And that's really when I had my closure.
Well, do you think that the moment you decided divorce was what you wanted and you were following through with it, do you feel like that was its own closure in some ways?
Yes, because the Cantrell women, when we are done, we're done. And there is no chance of going back. Because at that point, we've given you numerous chances. And there's a moment, and when we're done, we're done. And frankly, all of my sisters and I have experienced that. But I will also say, going back to what you said, when somebody cheats, they really have to go above and beyond to repair their relationship because they cheated. Like, no matter what happened in their relationship, they cheated. And that was a choice that the other party didn't make. And just not cheating is not a choice. That's not repair. Like, agreeing not to cheat is not.
No.
That doesn't count.
It's going above and beyond and doing the little thing.
You have to work really hard to repair with the other person.
I think I talked about this maybe in another, you know, our therapist gave my ex a list of things. And they weren't hard. He didn't have to, like, juggle and, you know, cut the yard at the same time. It wasn't anything that was very complex, but it was a consistent way of reestablishing trust. Texting before you come home.
Mm-hmm. But your ex never really quit having an affair.
No, I don't think he ever really gave that.
So he didn't want to do any of this.
Well, he also had a whole thing about authority, resistance to authority. So even just texting me that he was on his way, those little bitty things that say, I am telling you this because I want you to know where I am.
And because I respect you and want to repair our relationship. Every little text was all towards that.
He refused to do. Like, he did a few times, but he wasn't consistent. It still made me wonder where he was and kind of panic. What's he doing? You know, those kind of things. Because once you break trust with somebody, it's really hard to establish. You can do it, but you have to put in
10 times the effort.
Do it. And if you're not willing to do the effort, then, you know, what's the point? But I think, back to what you were saying, Bonnie, I think when I decided I mean, I'm not a Cantrell, but I have, burns are pretty much like that too. We will give you a mile, but.
And then there's just a moment where you're like,
uh-uh. 1 mile past the point where we have exhausted everything.
And that's that.
What's
funny is then it's immediate. Then we're like, get out. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
It's over.
See, and I'm not that way. I wish I were that way. I am the, you want another chance? Maybe.
But my chances have been exhausted.
Yeah.
Like, I was really fried. And when I decided that, and it was a hard decision. But when I made up my mind, that was it.
So what did y'all need for if you're going to talk about, we're talking about self-closure. What was it that helped seal the closure and helped you walk away without needing anything from the other person? For me, it was caring that much about myself. Knowing that I made the right decision for me and my kids.
I did not want to be around someone who talked to me unkindly ever again. I don't even know if that's a word. I did not want that. That and or took things out on me. Like that, that's what it was. I was like, no, I do not give permission for anybody to be.
For someone to be cruel to you.
Yeah. I remember like when I was talking about recovery from, because I've been in therapy for a very long time. Since the first affair, frankly, that's what led me to therapy. And after the second one, my therapist and I talked about like, what is it that you need? Like, let's make a list of things that you need. And the first one was be kind to me. And when I finally decided it was that this wasn't going to happen, I need to get divorced. And I went back to her. She was like, Lauren, being kind, like asking for somebody to be kind to you or to speak nicely to you, that's not a request. That should never be on the list. That should never be on the list. And she was like, don't ever let that be on the list again. You know, like this should be a deal breaker.
It's a deal breaker.
So I had plenty of closure because I was like, this is not something I'll ever allow in my life again. And as soon as I knew that that was true.
Yeah.
So, and so far, everything is a lot happier. You know, I don't deal with yelling or conflict on a daily basis ever. It's great.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said for the peace in the home.
Yeah. But that's all the closure I needed is like, this isn't allowed.
Well, you know,
that's what it is. Yeah. Is that this is not allowed in my life. Well, I'm not allowing
this. I will say part of my closure didn't come from my kids. And we've talked about this. When I started waffling about divorce, each one of my kids separately came to me and said, you're getting divorced. Please get divorced. We like it so much better this way. Everybody's happier. Like, just keep, you know, stay the course.
You can do it.
But, you know, to have that moment where I was like, wait, what am I doing? And to have them all go, keep going forward. This is what is needed for our family. Just to help sort of go, you know, that was a different kind of closure for me to have that support of my kids and what it is that we were doing. But,
well, okay. I think mine came about slowly, but at the very end, the last time my ex swapped lawyers and said, we need to try to work this out, blah, blah, blah. I really thought I had done, you know, I like to read and investigate things. I had done a lot of reading about generational behavioral issues in men in families.
Mm-hmm.
And I started looking at all the people that I knew that had cheated on their wives. Well, what do you know? Their dads had done it too. Blah, blah, blah. Did their parents stay together? And I thought, you know, I really don't want my kids, especially my son, to think that this is an okay thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't want my daughter to think that this is a way that someone should treat her.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, he was saying, and he had said it for a long time, if you can't forgive me, then we should just get a divorce. Like, he said it so many times, it was like the little carrot hanging over my head. And I thought, I'm not cheap enough to be bought off by this. Do you know what I'm saying? It almost felt like a bribery. Like, I'll keep you around if you can forgive me. And by that time, I had already forgiven him for the infidelity. And I was thinking, what is this about? And does he really think that that's an enticement to stay married?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. But do y'all know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I kept hearing it over and over again. And I kept thinking,
I always felt like for the longest time, I don't know if I've said this, and this is a bit more about the affairs, but for the longest time, every time we were intimate, all I could think of was the names of the two women he cheated on me with. Like, all the time, I would be like, well, I'm in bed with these two people now. And that's just how I feel. Like, I was in a committed marriage. If I was in an open marriage, it would be very different, but I wasn't. I was in a committed marriage, and I wasn't doing any of those things. And here I am in bed with now two other women, and I know their names, okay. Sarah and Amy. They're okay. There.
As a nurse, you know what scared me?
Yeah.
I was not in bed with the other woman.
Yeah.
I was in bed with everybody else that she had been with, and
all
her affair partners that I found out about. And, you know, when I had to get tested, I was like, oh, my God.
I made my ex go get tested. I made him go get tested. Scared me to death. But But you're not supposed to have to get over that, because it's not supposed to be a thing, you know?
Well, trust is just so hard to get back once it's gone.
It is. You can do it. Other people have done it, but it takes
a
committed effort.
Well, not only that, it takes a lot of true, dedicated love from the person who cheated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be, even when they feel like you're being completely irrational, they have to step up and still be the loving person, because they know that it's going to be, it's going to be like PTSD. It's going to come back.
Yeah.
And hit you when you absolutely least expect it. And they're going to have to be okay with dealing with it again for the next 15, 20 years. But that's a lot. Apparently we have all figured out how to have our own culture. Mm-hmm. We have not needed the men that we have left behind.
No.
To step in and provide that for us. Would y'all agree?
Yeah, nor have, in at least on my end, no one has expressed the need for any sort of additional closure. Me, you have?
No,
I'm not feeling that much.
Ants.
I assume he's good.
Oh, Bonnie.
Sometimes you just gotta laugh to deal with the tragedy.
Well, I'm so sorry. I mean, I think he knew that I loved him.
Yeah.
You know, before he passed, he knew that I loved him. He knew that the kids loved him. And I think that he and I always felt like our relationship moved from husband and wife to some sort of extended family.
Yeah.
We weren't just divorced, never going to speak to each other again.
Yeah.
We were in a bit of a codependent.
It's just what it was.
It's just what it was. Yeah. So I don't feel like he would have had needed anything.
Because you weren't angry.
No.
I don't remember there being a lot of anger.
No, especially when we got to that point. He'd had a girlfriend, and I had had a guy that I was dating. We didn't, there was not any anger between us. So, thank goodness. So, no. I think he knew he was very loved. So
that's good.
And I didn't need closure from him, thank goodness. I felt like I had already had everything from our marriage that I needed. So anyway. All right, ladies. Are y'all doing anything fabulous this week to live the life that you love? With or without closure?
I got show.
You have a kid that has a show, don't you?
I have a kid who has a show this weekend. I got a show next weekend. So shows close, yes, I'll have closure. And then I don't got show for a minute. So that will be nice. But I'm also really excited about his show, because our local company Dreamweavers did it. And the director is a really talented visual artist. And he made exquisite puppets.
I've seen the pictures of those. They look amazing.
So I made myself, I choreographed a piece in it. And last weekend he was like, well, do you want to stay and watch? And I said, hell no, I want to be surprised. Let me be surprised. So I haven't seen anything except the piece that I choreographed. So I'm excited to see that this weekend. And then next weekend is my show at school. And it's kind of our big spring show. And then I get to just take a moment and get prepared for the big, big show this summer, which is Sweeney Todd. And it's one of my favorites.
I can't wait. That'll be fabulous.
How about you?
Well, my son is coming home for a very short period of time for the weekend, and so I'm excited about that.
Yay.
So I think we'll have a good time.
Well, I don't really have anything planned, so I'm actually kind of excited about that. So it should be a good, nice, relaxing weekend.
Nice.
Good. Yes. Good. But y'all have a good weekend.
All right. Well, happy weekend.
Cheers, ladies.
Cheers.
Thank y'all for joining us for Champagne Sunday.
See you next week, girls.
Yeah, cheers.
Have a good week.
Cheers.
Yeah, cheers.